Off the Ball. Rugby.
I question that theory. And I wonder, come the biggest games, whether it will be the undoing of Leinster, as in the end it was in the final. Because Toulouse are taking their game on.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Football on Off the Ball.
With William Hill. You can boost your winnings on every game with new Bet Builder Extra. Only with William Hill. Download the app today. 18+ gamblingcare.ie.
This is News Talk.
You're very welcome along to Who You Got. We're looking ahead to the weekend's action in England, from the Premier League to the WSL. It's where we give our predictions for the games and generally get them wrong, although I do believe last week was a pretty successful week for a lot of people. Let's have a look at the latest standings on Who You Got. So this is last week's results, and by a good weekend for a lot of people, I mean a good weekend for me, because I got 4 points alongside Cullum and John. Will, of course, is flying high in the overall table. He only managed 2 points last week, and Mick only managed one. Will, Mick, very good evening to you.
Spurs killed us all last week.
Bloody FA Cup.
What was your prediction there?
We all had Tottenham to win Spurs that game, so nobody got anything in that.
Oh, because it went at full time as opposed to...
Yeah, 90 minutes.
And similarly...
You could pick extra time if you wanted.
Yeah, right. I think people overlooked it maybe.
Yeah, but I did it
for the Forest-Luton game, which was stupid, because Forest went and just took care of business, as everybody else expected them to do. And then I had Manchester. We had a lot of Arsenal 2-1s, which, if it wasn't for dodgy penalty taking, would have happened. There was a few United 2-1s, so I don't think anybody got anything out of that game either.
No.
So the Liverpool. Can I say how much Who You Got has infected my life? Right, I had Liverpool to beat Accrington Stanley 5-0. It was an FA Cup match where the underdog had put in a really, really good performance, and they were leaking goals at the end of the game, right? It was 5 minutes of injury time given. Within those 5 minutes, the Accrington keeper went down for about two. But it's an FA Cup game. There's no goal difference. It doesn't matter. The result is decided. The ref rightly blew the full time whistle on 95 minutes. And in my fury of wanting Liverpool to get one more goal, was like, it's a disgrace. He can't do that. He didn't add on the injury time. There was a 2 minute injury in that 5 minutes. Just warped craziness. Like.
And is the Accrington Stanley goalkeeper in this Who You Got table, and did he have 4-0 by any chance?
Well, I think it was a real injury. I'm going to stick with that.
Let's have a look at the overall table as a result of those scores last week. Will still riding high, 5 points clear at the top on John. Will's on 51 points, John's on 46, but as is Nathan also on 46. And then Mick, yourself and myself are on 45. So
I've gone from second to joint fourth. Oh, woeful.
What's the forfeit for whoever finishes bottom here? Jer is the basement dweller at the moment.
There was no punishment last year. We were going to make Nathan drop out and bring up a young buck from the office. Never did.
We promoted two people, Owen and John Duggan.
Yeah, I was basically the token inclusion.
We've expanded the league expansion, but I do think relegation is on the cards for sure.
There should be something better than that.
Oh, you think, yeah.
Because, like, we can't afford to give a good prize to whoever wins it. So we can, forfeits are much cheaper than prizes.
You mean a tattoo or having to wear a jersey to a match or something along those lines?
The winner has a great prize this year, though. The winner
they're equal things, all right, getting a tattoo or wearing a jersey to a match. They're of equal severity and of lifelong. Yeah, Jer should get a tattoo of your name on his somewhere in his body.
Whoever finishes top,
exactly.
Or just Will's name anyway. Oh, disgusting.
Let's have a look at our first game that we're previewing this week, which I presume is Arsenal against Aston Villa. Indeed,
The big one.
Anybody going for a Villa win? Yes, Shane and Jer are both going for a Villa win. They're obviously at the Emirates Stadium at 5:30 tomorrow evening. Myself and Cullen both going for a 1-0 win to Arsenal. Catlin going for a 2-1 win to Arsenal. Phil also going for a 2-1 win to Arsenal. Will, Mick, you've both gone for 2-2 draws. What's informing your logic here, Will?
So I've gone against the logic of the way this fixture goes. So we've only had one draw in the last 18 meetings between the two clubs. So it's a game that generally doesn't end in a draw. Aston Villa obviously famously went and won there last year, which basically ended the dying embers of Arsenal's title hopes with that victory. Arsenal returned with a 2-0 win early on the season. That game that we found very difficult to pick, but Arsenal won. A rare mistake from Martinez, but won the goals, as I recall, back in August. And look, Aston Villa have snapped this bad away run that they were on, where they'd lost the last five away from home. Arsenal have got the best home record in the league, which I think I respect that, despite the fact that they're missing a lot of chances. So they've picked up 24 points from 30 at home, which is the best across the league and one of the best records in Europe. You have to respect them at home, despite the losses against Newcastle and Manchester United in the Cups in recent times. But I would have serious concerns about Arsenal's missing of chances over the last week, including the second half against Tottenham midweek as well. Tottenham were incredibly leaky, but Arsenal didn't take the chances. I just think that Villa can go, frustrate them, get a point tomorrow. Mick will give you the total opposite argument on this.
No, I don't. I'm kind of leaning against my own decision here now. I kind of feel like Arsenal will win. I kind of made a snap decision. It was the morning after Villa had beaten Everton, and the issue of Arsenal missing chances, I feel like Villa aren't a bad team for them to play. All, like, joking and, you know, the passion side of it aside, like, Villa are like, they kept a clean sheet against Everton, their third of the season, which is, like, among the lowest in the Premier League. I think Southampton have won, and they were with Ipswich, I think, on two, and then obviously got their third one against Everton. Everton can't score, but at the same time, Everton had three clear-cut chances in that game. It wasn't like Villa had, you know, found the key. They were as leaky as they ever were. It's just Everton couldn't take the chances because they're Everton and they don't score. Arsenal aren't like that. So despite missing chances, and, you know, I think they'll be given a lot of opportunities. Now, I do have them to score two. The argument in favour of Villa, I think the away win on Wednesday night was a big one. They have been poor away from home. They've had a big run of games because the FA Cup was thrown in alongside two home games in the Premier League. They've had a run of games at Villa Park. They, you know, have won every game so far this year, won all three games in 2025. They're in an okay run of form without playing well. They haven't put 90 minutes together yet this year, but I feel like confidence is growing because of those wins. Ollie Watkins scored, which I think is important. And my concern, one thing I would look for Arsenal is I don't think Villa fear Arsenal.
Yeah.
Like, they beat them twice last year. That was a good game at the start of the year. I don't think 2-0 was a fair reflection on it. Ollie Watkins could have had a hat-trick in the first half.
Where are you on the Villa strikers at the moment?
Well, Duran didn't get on in his first game back during the week. I'm generally frustrated with Watkins in that I just don't trust him in a one-on-one. And that's a worry.
Did you trust him this time last year?
Yeah, this time last year for sure. This, he tends to actually come into seasons. He's a very, very good player.
Season's halfway
after
through
Christmas.
Now.
Mm. Yeah, but I mean, just his stats all the way through. Yeah, but he hasn't been poor all season.
No,
he's had bursts, and it's not just goal scoring. It's sort of his general play as well. So he played very well on Wednesday night.
Has he been the best striker at the club this season?
No, not at all. And before Duran's suspension, he was gone. But he does offer something that Duran doesn't. Like, that is something. When you watch 90 minutes, or you watch them all the time, Duran is a bit of a wild card. It is hard to play with the structure with him there as the lone striker, because there is a kind of a patient build-up structure that Watkins is very, very suited for. Now, I don't think they get the forwards involved enough, but as a game gets stretched, Watkins is a very, very good player, I think. And he's a great hold-up player. He's a great link player. There's a lot more to him than his chances and his goals, but he obviously just has to take them. So I would be confident enough that Watkins will actually finish the season quite well, I have to say. But again, like, the goal on Wednesday was massive because he'd missed a sitter in the first half. You know, he'd missed a one-on-one chance where he had too much time to think and he hit it wide. He has slightly less time to think, but almost unmissable on Wednesday night, but he scores. That's a big change. That's a big build-up, a confidence builder for him. So I'd be happy enough. Villa definitely just need to get a little bit of form together. They played Onana, Tielemans and Kamara for only the second time all season together. I think that will be the starting midfield three against Arsenal. I think that's a good away-from-home build. I think Onana is a lot of physical presence in midfield that I think Arsenal will struggle with a little bit. And I think that Kamara is in, like, the sooner the rest of the viewing public, you know, the sort of the neutrals see what a gem this guy is, the sooner he'll be gone from Villa Park.
Do you know what
I mean? So it's like, take it easy with the man of the matches and things like that People haven't noticed him, as they do tend to take their time noticing kind of defensive midfield players. But since he's come back into full fitness, it took him a month or two, obviously, he'd been out for a cruciate, like. But he is playing some unbelievable football at the moment. So Villa are there or thereabouts. I kind of think if Arsenal play to their standards and Villa don't massively step it up to what they're before, they haven't had a 90-minute performance all season, I would argue. I know Arsenal, you'll talk about Arsenal's troubles. They're not non-existent. They weren't even great the other night either.
No, no.
There's no mad turnaround. I kind of feel they'll get the chances to win this game. I have 2-2. That's high scoring. That's a positive outlook from a Villa fan.
Yeah.
You know, I think there'll be goals both ways. If I was to put money on it, I'd probably lean towards Arsenal just getting more of those clear-cut chances.
Yeah, Arsenal played 8 times in the last month. They haven't kept a single clean sheet, but they do have the fewest goals conceded of anybody in the Premier League this season. I hope that there's a situation coming where they kind of return to that mean with regards to their defence and they start to keep clean sheets again. And I guess that's what I'm predicting this weekend, going for that 1-0 win for Arsenal. But again, it's based on the expectation that they'll get back to that as opposed to any sort of recent form.
Yeah, I think they have to be defensively solid. I mean, they missed so many chances in the last week and a bit. So they had an expected goals of 4 against Newcastle in the EFL Cup game. I think it was tipping around 3 for the Manchester United game. Second half again, so many chances missed against Tottenham during the week as well. And obviously Gabriel Jesus has now added to that problem as well. Even though he's not the most prolific of forwards, he takes away an option for the moment. And like, I don't know, there's nobody really who it feels like is going to go on a run of goals, whether that be Trossard, Martinelli, Raheem Sterling has been very, very indifferent. And then you take away Bukayo Saka.
Gabriel, he'll get all the goals you need.
Yeah, but it might have to be something like that, because Kai Havertz has obviously missed a string of chances in the last few weeks, and they're missing Bukayo Saka. It's incredibly obvious. All of his creativity over on the right-hand side, where he was almost a one-man creation machine on that side. And it just feels like it's much easier to defend against Arsenal with the current attacking setup that they have. So if they are going to go on a run of wins, they probably do need to keep it to 1-0s and 2-0s if it's going to happen.
Manchester United versus Brighton is our next game here. So the lineup here with regards to predictions, Jared's going for a Brighton win. There's a lot of Manchester United wins predicted. John, Kathleen, Phil going for draws in this game. Will, you're going for United 2-1. Mick, you're going for United 1-0. And actually, I'm going for a 1-1 draw in this game.
Predictions submitted before last night's game.
Yeah, that's true. A decent win for Brighton last night. Like, you know, that's a...
For Manchester United, then, I mean, there was also a pretty significant win for
Manchester United. I don't know what to say about that.
Might be significant more than decent.
A significant bit more than decent, do you reckon?
Yeah, I mean, it felt important because, again, they're frustrating that game for so long. And obviously, Diallo is just in incredible form now at this stage. So that hat-trick has brought him on to 9 goals, 7 assists for the season. He's got his reward with the contract. He's been their best player by a sizable distance since Ruben Amorim has come into the club. We had a feeling that maybe the freedom that he was going to get over on the right-hand side was going to be important. But also, he's one of the few players who have been putting in the type of shift that Amorim has been requiring. So he's won the ball back more than any player in the Premier League this season in the opposition half. So he brings that to their play as well. And that bit of graft was maybe seen a bit as well when they went down to 10 men for the best part of 70 minutes at the Emirates in the weekend at the FA Cup as well. It's not like they played well against either Southampton or against Arsenal, but they found a way to get 2 results. And I think if they're going to pull themselves up, that's the way that Manchester United have to do it. And I would take Mick's point as well. That feels like a very significant win for Brighton, who've been heavily hit by injury as well. They've been horrific on the road, and the last 8 games in the league were very, very poor for them. And it feels like just getting that win might instill some confidence back into them again.
Yeah, and a hard place to go as well. Like, Portman Road has actually, they've taken some points against really decent teams there this year. I'm a little bit torn on United. I don't think it's bad for morale to go and get that win and to build on what the good week that they've had. But, geez, like, Southampton are the worst, could go down as the worst team in Premier League history. They've got 6 points after 21 games. The record, I think, is 11, Derby County. You know, that's the territory they're in at the moment. You know, like, this Southampton team is woeful. And United should be making easy work of them. Mm-hmm. And they were lucky to win it in the end. Not saying they didn't deserve to win it, but they were lucky to win it. You get an injury time goal, even if you get 2 of them, there's still an element of luck involved. So, I don't know. I think there's definitely, it's nice to have good vibes for a change. But it's funny, that ended 1-1 last night. Nothing different would have happened, and I think we'd be back in crisis talks again.
Yeah, I wouldn't be particularly surprised. Just one of the moments from last night was that opportunity for Alejandro Garnacho in the first half, which was just an absolute shocker the way he managed to miss a target entirely. Reports this week linking him with a move to Napoli. £40 million valuation seems to be what Napoli are going to offer for him. Obviously, they've got a bit of money coming in themselves after losing Kvara are about to lose him this window. Do you sell Garnacho for that price? United are saying that they want a little bit more for him.
Just wonder why he, what he's done to be worth more. I'm not saying if United believe in that, hold on to him then. Do you know what I mean? Because nobody's going to come in with 60, 70 million for Garnacho just because he's a youngster at Manchester United. This is a player who's had moments of decent to brilliant, I would say, but in a team, in a mid-table Premier League team over the past 3 years, or past three seasons maybe. So it's not like he, you know, it's not like he's the bright spark. He is like the guy, and then everybody else around him is terrible. He's in and out of form. He's in and out of the team. Mm. And United are terrible. So how good is Garnacho? Again, if you believe it, then hold on to him. Otherwise, I think 40 is good value.
For PSR, it has to be incredibly tempting. So it'll go down as pure profit. So essentially, you can spend 2 to 3 times that 40 million on the back of it. And if United are going to have to rebuild their squad, they need to open up a little bit of space in that regard as well. I'd agree with Amarin, though, that there's a huge amount of potential in Garnacho. But it's a case of his application is going to have to change. If he's going to work within the system, he needs to work much harder. It's not that he lacks any of the talent on the other side of the ball, but you could understand if they were tempted to sell at that type of money.
And do people change?
People change?
Do people change?
He's yes. Very young, though.
People can change.
Do they, though?
What do you want to change? What's your issue?
I don't know, but if Amram is worried about his application and his remit in many, many ways is massive culture change at the club. Maybe there's some sacrifices to make. Maybe there's a thing of like, this guy is good enough and he could be one of the building blocks, but I can't take the risk that he won't go and come back as a completely new person next year. Do you know? It's like, right, let's go with character first. And then try and build quality around it afterwards.
The thing is,
I really think that of all teams in world football that could do with that attitude, Manchester United are number one.
He is 20 years of age at the moment. When Ahmad was out on loan from Manchester United, granted that's 4 years ago at this point, he was only, what, 18 when they sent him out on loan? Is it? I don't think the ship has sailed on Garnacho going out and getting experience elsewhere.
Oh, going out and getting a loan deal somewhere?
That's a different aspect.
Yeah. I feel like he's too established. I think he's too established. I think he's played too many games. By the way, I'm telling you where I'm coming from in terms of if Amarin has the concerns that he's suggesting about Garnacho. I've seen enough of Garnacho as a talent to suggest that you should try and keep him and make him one of the building blocks. What I'm saying is the things we don't know, if they are that bad, I wouldn't be banking on projects. I wouldn't be banking on I'm going to put my arm around and fix this guy. I would just try. I really feel like at this stage, while he has the capital, he's got a year and a half so left of getting away with big moves. You know, while he has that capital, he needs to get that dressing room right.
Yeah.
There's one reason I don't think he'll leave in this window, by the way, and that's because Rashford will leave. So if Rashford goes out, they're not going to leave.
Do you think Rashford will leave here in January?
I do. I think he'll either go on loan or he'll be sold, one or the other. Mm. More likely on loan for the rest of the season. If he goes, they're very short of options of specialists to play on the left-hand side. And then what you end up having to do is playing Bruno out of position, maybe on the left. And again, that takes away from his qualities as well. I think he'll want to keep a dedicated left-sided player there.
Yeah, interesting to see what kind of market there is for Rashford, though, because I do feel like
Borussia Dortmund, AC Milan.
The word gets out. AC Milan just seem to want to buy everyone, like every reject, everyone that. But it's like, you know, he is cast aside there. It's massively affected his value.
Yeah. Now that Barcelona can sign players, it feels like the, you know, glittering thing that's in front of them right now that Laporta might not be able to actually resist.
Is Marcus Rashford actually in that category?
I don't know.
Or do we just think he is? Is he just a celebrity?
The Rashford is three.
How does Marcus Rashford improve Barcelona at the moment?
He probably doesn't, but that's Laporta for you.
Well, that's, especially, sorry, I'm arguing with Laporta here as opposed to you.
Yeah, especially if it was, say,
we get him up on the line there.
Yeah, there's talks that he might take 3 million in salary for the rest of the season, that he'd reduce the salary to go out to play at the moment to Rashford. And if that's the case, there will be plenty of clubs who will think, if they get the Marcus Rashford 3 years ago. The problem is there's been no evidence in the last 2 years to suggest that Marcus Rashford is going to go to the, let's say, the ceiling that we thought he might go to at one point.
Yeah, for sure. We should mention when we're talking about contracts and moves, we're not actually previewing their game, but Erling Haaland has penned a new 10-year deal at Manchester City today, which he wrote
banned, didn't it?
He wrote an open letter to Premier League defenders saying that he's had to come to this decision after careful consideration and almost apologises for what they have to go through over the next decade. So he's going to be 34 when that contract expires.
It's a new record contract. It's gone past Cole Palmer's new 9-year deal.
Right.
The longest in world football.
He's got a good agent. Let's just say that my suspicion is that that's a contract designed to get as much money as possible within club structures. And that I would be very surprised if there isn't a new contract signed or he doesn't... By the time 9.5 years follows, if he is still at Manchester City, it won't be on the same contract.
Yeah, agreed. This kicks the release clause down the road by a couple of years as well. So the release clause was meant to kick in 27, I think.
29,
So there was a release clause that was kicking in like a year before that. The contract was due to end in 27. So obviously they've retained the value by not having a release clause in place in 2 years' time. So in 29 under the new one, apparently it's 100 million plus the release clause even in 29. But I'm with Mick. I think he'll have signed at least one, if not two, new contracts at that point. That's what tends to happen. If he's anywhere near the same level at 27, 28, he'll be demanding a pay increase to be the best paid player in the Premier League anyway.
Yeah, for sure. We should do our charity bet, Mick, because again, we're going to do this through the prism of a game that we're not actually previewing this week, right?
Well, we haven't had much luck lately with the games that we are previewing.
Okay.
So, well, here's my logic on. What have I just said about Southampton?
That they're not very good?
That they're, yeah, they've 6 points in 21 games and are on course, if not to be the worst performing, at least, Premier League team of all time. Who are the darlings of Premier League commentators, nation and indeed worldwide?
Liverpool.
No. They're not the darlings anymore. This is a team who can kick you up and down
Nottingham Forest.
The pitch and get absolutely no criticism for it whatsoever. And in fact, referees will be told, isn't it great to see them let it flow as Ryan Yates kills a man? Right?
So are you going odds on Nottingham Forest to win 1-0 and just taking your stake back?
No. I'm saying that Forest, in their incredible form, will win by more than a goal.
Right.
So we'll take the -1 to win the game at home to Southampton, and we'll throw in on-form striker Chris Wood to score a goal in that game.
Okay. What's the rough price?
I don't have it.
Okay, no worries. But so
I've sent it on to Lido, and he'll let us know next week if it wins. If not, we'll just never mention it. So Forest -1 with Chris Wood to score should get us a nice few.
That's reasonable, I think.
Yeah.
Let's have a look at the next game that we're looking ahead to this weekend, which is Everton versus Spurs. Nobody going for an Everton win, despite the fact that they're playing at Goodison this weekend. Draw for Cullum, draw for myself. Jerry and John going for Spurs, as is Kathleen. Mick, you're picking a draw. Nathan and Phil going for Spurs and draw, respectively. Will, you're going for a draw. Shane's going for Spurs. So you obviously have similar faith that I do, that Everton might actually be able to get something out of this game.
Yeah. I think I think picking Spurs to get anything is showing faith that they'll get something out of it as well. Like the form they're in at the moment. I watched Everton the other night. You watched Spurs. Everton are terrible. Like and there's only so much David Moyes is going to be able to do. There's not a lot of good players at that club.
Did you hear him say that he's already burnt out?
I did, yeah. And I understand it.
Yeah.
Looking
at the attacking options.
As long as Jordan Pickford is taking free kicks from the halfway line to lump them into a box. I was looking at this doing, and I'm used to seeing it. I've seen a good bit of Everton, but it just something dawned on me. I was like, there's nobody else does that. There's no other team that you watch on a regular basis at a high level of football that just, like, you know, the goalkeeper comes out to the halfway line to lodge a ball. It's like, oh, free kick, ball into the box. You know, it's so just, I don't know. Oh, it just doesn't look like it fits the Premier League anymore. So Everton, at the same time, there was an amazing atmosphere at Goodison the other night. There was definitely a kind of a renewed sense of optimism, and things are turning around at the club in general. And they're kind of, I think, enjoying every Goodison experience as well before they say goodbye. So I do think the atmosphere will lift them a certain way, and I don't think it's going to take much to put the heebie-jeebies up Spurs. You know, I don't, they're not exactly resilient at the moment. You know, it's like a lot of the things can break them quite easily. So for that alone, I feel like Everton could get something out of the game.
And there will be a kick from Moyes at some stage.
Yeah, I'm not ready to back them to win a game yet until I see it, I suppose, is probably the way I've gone for a draw here.
I think when you look at Everton's struggles up front in black and white, like So they've failed to score in 12 of the Premier League games they played in this season. They have 5 Premier League goals since early November, and 2 of them were scored by defenders in the one game. So they've got a huge problem trying to put the ball into the net. And again, we saw that similarly.
Calvert-Lewin, oh my God. He's kicked the ball over the bar from anywhere, from 100 yards or 1 yard.
1,212 minutes without a goal now for Calvert-Lewin.
Yeah.
And he's looking at it, yeah.
And like, I know Moyes has talked about it a bit. It seems very unlikely they will actually be able to get any kind of striker cover in during the end of this month as well. So to an extent, he's stuck with what he has. So he won with West Ham against Spurs last year, but I would argue with a much better set of players than Everton have currently. So I think Moyes sets them up to try and be difficult to beat. I think they're still decent defenders, albeit ageing defenders of the club. As Mika said, Jordan Pickford, he might be taking the free kicks, but also he's likely to be vitally important for the rest of the season if they're going to stay up.
He made a smashing save from Rodgers.
He did.
Yeah, really, really good.
And like Tottenham, this is probably the ideal team for Everton to play if they're going to try and get a goal, given how leaky Tottenham have been, albeit their new goalkeeper has definitely secured things and he plays with such a different style to Fraser Forster that maybe they'll be a little bit more secure there. But even during the Arsenal game during the week, again, you could just see their defensive issues and missing their two first-choice centre-backs leaves them so, so vulnerable. I was shocked with the way they played against Tamworth, not just because they cost us points and who he got last week, but effectively he rotated just the front three. And I'm sure Ange Postecoglou will say there's not much room for rotation because of the amount of players who were injured. But for the best part, he had the players that played in the League Cup game against Liverpool playing, and then just Kulusevski and Son coming on in extra time to turn it around. Like, that was really, really, really poor. And I thought they were quite bad in the North London derby. Probably deserved to be beaten by a bit more midweek as well. So I'd be very worried about Tottenham coming into this. And that's why I've gone draw. You couldn't make a strong recommendation for either team here.
Two teams in awful form.
It was interesting. I was reading Andy Hunter earlier on and he was making the point that Everton are and have been a little bit screwed by PSR of their own doing in recent years. But that's because of some of the money that they have spent. And some of the money that they have spent on attackers has been absolutely disastrous. So he refers to the director of football, Kevin Thelwell, and the attackers that he has signed on his watch are as follows: Neil Mopay, Dwight McNeil, Jack Harrison, Arnaud Danjuma, Yusuf Chermiti, Beto Ndiaye, Jesper Lindstrom, Armando Broja. It's not exactly a phenomenal list. Now, they have been unlucky to a degree. I mean, McNeil has been injured since December. Bro has had his injuries as well.
Andrew Bro was injured when they signed him.
Yeah.
They took a risk there.
Which, to be fair, not exactly a phenomenal move when he knew that he was potentially going to be injured as well. So Calvert-Lewin is the big issue, though. I mean, that is somebody who has shown a level that is much higher than anything that they have at the moment. But I think the evidence is probably starting to show that his level was not that. Maybe that was actually the free call.
A bit of a purple match, I would say, yeah. But he is better than what he's shown at the moment. He's like, he genuinely is just one of those, the ultimate needs a goal in off his arse kind of player, like, at the moment. But then he'll just get injured.
Yeah.
He also, up until now, on tended to kick into form at some point. So for the last 4 or 5 years, he's never been as good as he was kind of around the COVID year.
Yeah.
But since then, generally, when Everton have stayed up, Calvert-Lewin has got them a few goals. And almost the cliche has become, with a striker like Dominic Calvert-Lewin, Everton will score enough goals to pick up enough points to stay up.
Am I right in saying that, like, percentage-wise or goals per game, Calvert-Lewin's best form is under Ancelotti?
Yes.
Like, yeah. I mean, how big a part was it? One of the greatest managers of all time coming to manage you? You have to say that probably impacted on Calvert-Lewin's success at that point as well.
He's also a player that, if he didn't have that 6 month period, like, he'd be seen as like a Everton academy guy that you don't understand why is, like, how could Everton have not moved on from Dominic Calvert-Lewin? He had one purple patch that put him on everybody's radar, but other than, it wasn't like when he was a kid we thought he was the next big thing or anything, you know.
So, yeah, no, I totally agree with you. That's why I'm kind of thinking to myself, what is his real level?
Yeah.
Is this potentially his real level?
How long does he get now? This is like years.
Well, he's got a lot of time, you know.
He gets it. It's like he's Everton's number 9 until the day he dies. Like, you know, it's like, come on. It's like at some point he's not good enough, you know.
I do think, I'm not sure for how long, but I do think there will be a run of form that David Moyes will get out of this team in the next few months. And somebody's going to be the man who's going to go on a purple patch. He's going to go on a run and be in a purple patch, I should say. And it could be him. We don't know what the future's going to hold, but I think that at the end of the season, if we're looking back at the end of this and he's scored 1-2 goals between now and the end of the season, it's a real question about where his career has actually gone. There's one last game we want to look at this weekend. It's in the WSL. It's the Manchester Derby. Nobody is picking Manchester United here, and understandably so. Shane and Jer are going for draws. Everybody else is going for a win. Now,
Jer's either going to have a brilliant week or he's going to stay at the bottom of the table, because he has gone contrarian on every single pick.
Better start looking up tattoo artists, Jer, is the message here. So United have never actually won at Manchester City in the WSL. Their only victory over Manchester City was a 2-1 win in May 2023, but that was at Manchester United. So the only thing that maybe gives you a bit of hope for that draw or for a Manchester United win is that they were in brilliant form in December. City were beaten by Everton and Barcelona before their winter break. So maybe the form lines favour it a little bit in terms of United. They're only a point behind Manchester City, I think, in the table. So
I think if that game had been in December, you would read more into that form than now. So it's really weird. So that was the 15th of December, I think, the last game that Man United won, which was that run of three wins in a row. And now they've had a ridiculously long break. I know some teams played in the FA Cup last week, but for the best part, it's been a long time since teams have played in the Women's Super League. So I wouldn't read into the form that much. I know City's management were talking about the fact that they maybe needed the break after the couple of losses to Barcelona in the Champions League and those surprise points they dropped against Everton. And they probably have put in, again, I'd say a mini pre-season coming back out. They'll hope to come back out firing. So it's hard to make a case for United in this one, I think.
Yeah. Mick?
I just have City as I just... United are tight enough at the back, and I think they'll frustrate City. I just feel like City will have too much for them. And again, yeah, it's hard to judge form lines after such a long break. So that's why I've gone tight. I've gone 2-0, I think.
For sure. Lads, enjoy the football this weekend. Enjoy watching Nottingham Forest struggle and labour to a 1-0 win.
With Chris Wood scoring after 2 minutes and thinking it's all sorted.
Bring on a defender immediately after that early goal. Thanks a million, Will O'Callaghan, Mick McCarthy. That has been Who You Got. We'll take a quick break. Back right after these.
Football on Off The Ball.
With William Hill. You can boost your winnings on every game with new Bet Builder Extra. Only with William Hill. Download the app today. 18+ gamblingcare.ie.
This is News Talk.